Hey everyone, it's Shaz Rupel and welcome to the BGSS Deploy podcast. This is undoubtedly going to be a really popular episode as we unfold the world of artificial intelligence, striking the headlines for the last sort of couple of years. We've got three fantastic guests from BGSS and we're going to deep dive into what it means for the delivery management domain. So I would like to firstly welcome our three guests. So first guest is Simon. Simon?
Yes, hi Shaz. I'm Simon de Timmery. I'm the head of data and AI practice at BGSS. So I look after all of our offerings and people within the data and AI space.
Welcome, Simon. And our second guest is Laura.
Hello, I'm Laura Musgrave. I'm the lead researcher in responsible AI for Spark, part of BGSS. And I look at how we can make the most effective use of AI, taking into account any of the benefits, but also the risks as well.
Great. Welcome, Laura. And Jonathan.
Hi, I'm Jonathan. I am the group capability lead for delivery management. So I look after all of our delivery managers here at BGSS. And also I'm a delivery manager by day as well with our wonderful clients.
Fantastic. Welcome, Jonathan. So first thing is lots of headlines at the moment around artificial intelligence and lots of thought leadership already out there. So what we aim to achieve in this session is share some of our thoughts around from a BGSS perspective, what we think artificial intelligence is. And then more importantly, how can we use artificial intelligence, adopt that in the context of delivery management? So let's start with a bit of a definition here first. Simon, what's your thoughts around artificial intelligence?
Yeah, so the way we define artificial intelligence at BGSS is not really dissimilar to the way it's defined in general, but we kind of, AI is a machine's ability to tackle tasks that mimic or involve human intelligence. And the idea is to provide efficient and effective means to accomplish these tasks. It encompasses various subfields, and there are a lot of them are buzzwords, including machine learning, which specifically focuses on developing algorithms and models that enable computers to learn patterns and make predictions from data. And then a broader field of analysis is called data science, and there's major overlaps between data science and artificial intelligence, which involves a wider range of techniques and methodologies for working with data, including data collection, data cleansing, data visualization, statistical analysis, and machine learning is a subfield of data science too. So the tools which are created by are called models, and they're used to process new data to enable the generation of insights or make predictions. And so we've got things like advanced techniques like neural networks, computer vision, natural language processing, which are all part of the AI field and AI systems to carry out complex tasks like image recognition, speech synthesis, or data analysis. And obviously, you know, I can't talk about AI without talking about generative AI, which has really kind of kicked a new AI bubble, a new buzz around AI in recent times. So a very simple definition of generative AI is a discipline of AI that aims to create content in different formats. So obviously everyone knows about the applications for text and image with ChatGPT and Midjourney, but it, you know, it expands beyond with video, audio, and code as well. And BGSS code generation is a pretty important aspect of AI. We talk a lot about AI today because it's come into prominent focus very recently, or just over a year ago, really. It has real potential to be a game changer. It's been in the news for a while. We're all kind of seeing that we're on the verge of an AI revolution that will transform the way we work and that the way organizations are structured and reshape how, at least at BGSS, we offer services as well. But we know as well is that AI doesn't happen overnight. You need to have kind of a digital core sorted properly. So having your data in order, having your systems in order, having a good cloud strategy is all quite important to be able to leverage AI properly. And it's not that easy to successfully uptake AI. There is a lot to do in terms of, you know, there's a lot of learning. There's a pretty steep AI literacy curve, which is kind of also prefaced by a data literacy curve. And finally, sorry, I'm rambling on, but you know, very briefly, AI is not new. Yes, a lot of people have heard about AI more recently, but the term AI was coined in 1956, so a while back. And, you know, since then, there have been major advances, such as, you know, I think in 1997, we all heard about IBM Deep Blue that defeats Kasparov, the best chess player. We've all heard of IBM Watson that defeats Jeopardy players in 2011. And more recently, a really mind-blowing advances in 2016 was when AlphaGo defeats the best Go player in the world, Lee Sedol. All of these were kind of years away every time when they happened. So it was always a kind of big revolution. Lee Sedol being defeated by AlphaGo was, you know, that was supposed to take another 10 years to happen. And it's really, really surprising. So we've seen this acceleration is not new, but I think there was a new inflection point when OpenAI released GPT in November of 2022. The fact that it reached 100 million users in 2023, in January 2023, in just 2 months, it was just really fast uptake of the technology. And what it did, and the reason we're talking about AI today, is it used to be that AI was for builders, for people that did things, you know, that could code and integrate AI technologies into products. Now AI is for everyone. AI is a product and people can use it very effectively.
So I think in summary, what you're saying is, I mean, I keep hearing the word data, right? So it seems like it's a very data-driven kind of model, right? In terms of how AI kind of operates. Would you agree?
Yeah, so you can't really do AI without data, but actually using generative AI today is the reason why it's democratized so much is that the users of those tools don't actually need a lot of data to be able to make anything useful from it, because these models have been pre-trained using enormous amounts of data. And so what we talk about more commonly are called foundation models, so large language models and foundation models. So they've been trained on you know, for image generation, they've been trained on lots and lots of images, which means that when you come in and just run your prompt, it accesses, you know, this training and generates new images. So you don't have to come with your own data to use a tool like Midjourney. And similarly for a tool like ChatGPT, it's been trained on pretty much the entire all the text on the web, and so they've done the work of training these models with data. However, a tool like ChatGPT becomes increasingly more useful when you bring your own data to it, when you start using models like GPT-4 with data from the enterprise. And I'm sure Jonathan can talk about that as well, in terms of some of the work we've been doing internally. That is when you really bring more value. You personalize the tools to yourself, and there's different techniques. There's bringing things in what's called the context, so you have a window where you can pass text to these models. You can pass a lot of data through these, and that context window is expanding and continues to expand. The other tool is you can fine tune it, so you can take a model that's been pre-trained and then you can add more data to the training model and retrain that model, and will improve and actually start embedding your own data to it. But really what's important is that you don't need to invest millions and millions of pounds in training a model, because they've been trained for you.
Interesting. So you can pretty much start from quite a foundational level. So if you're an organization looking to adopt AI and kind of start on this journey, what we're saying is we don't need lots of data to get there, right? We can kind of start at a very basic level and obviously naturally then build that over time. I just want to bring...
I'll just nuance that a little bit. So it depends on the applications. But yes, you can get started with very little to no data, but depends on what you're trying to accomplish.
Great. Thanks, Simon. And Laura, I understand you've done a fair bit of research around generative AI and as such. What are your thoughts around the sort of data aspect of it and you know, what you've kind of found so far?
For me, I'm particularly interested in sort of people's responses to it. So looking at, for example, the perception of the public and how they interpret generative AI. And there is definitely a growing awareness now of not only the use of AI, but a lot of questions around how data is being used. Is it being used responsibly? And sort of, they've got a lot of expectations, I suppose, that weren't necessarily there before, you know, generative AI burst into the public consciousness. So there's a lot of questions there around, you know, what data is being used, how is it being used, and is it being used responsibly?
And I guess ethics play a big part in that, right? In the heart of everything there. So it's what's been the general sort of consensus so far?
There's a lot more awareness now. It's definitely been something that's been growing, this kind of awareness, I'd say probably over the last 5 years in particular, and even more so since ChatGPT became available publicly. There's a lot of questions. People sort of want to try and understand. They want to know more. you know, that awareness continues to grow. So there are more and more questions about, you know, how can I find out how data is being used? Is my data involved? You know, is there something personal to me in there? You know, what do I need to know about who's using AI, how they're using it, and what kind of data is involved? So there's a lot more questions, and people are looking for sort of answers from companies in particular about how that's being used.
And there's also the aspect of how it will transform society as a whole, right? Which is you know, even bigger than the implications behind the data that's been used for it and the data that is currently still in use. So there's real potential for complete revolution of roles and how people do their jobs on a daily basis. And there is an ethical responsibility for organizations to help with some of that transition and also, you know, try and drive that change in a sustainable manner. So I think you being able to bring employees on that journey and you know, some people that have been SMEs in a specific role might become trainers or knowledge repositories, right, as it continues. So there is still space for people in all of this, but there is a need to evolve.
Yeah, and that's a great segue into, I guess, Jonathan, from your perspective as a delivery manager, talking about the adoption of AI into roles and everyday job. What's been your sort of take on it so far and your experience?
I guess my favourite analogy I've heard to describe how we use it in delivery management at the moment, and apologies to whoever I first heard this from, I've completely stolen it, is that having a particularly generative AI at the moment is like having a very keen intern to help you with your day-to-day work. An intern who occasionally is overkeen and lies slightly. But it's been a big boon for me in the last 6 months or so. There's probably, for us, aside from delivering AI solutions, there's probably three major usages for delivery management. Certainly content creation, it's a great starting place to create already fairly well phrased content, whether that's text content or images for slide decks. It gives you that kick past maybe your writer's block as you get into that. Going back to what was mentioned about having your own data as well, we've been running some internal projects where we use our own intellectual property. Enterprise Agile, obviously, being a great example of that, and we've trained our own model on data that we own and data that we can verify, which is a really good way of getting around that problem of AI occasionally not always coming up with the truth. When you know the data and you own your own knowledge base, you can authenticate and validate its responses a lot easier. And then just the assistance side of what AI can offer. So we've been using Microsoft Copilot recently, and that is a really useful tool for a delivery manager. Simple things like just querying Copilot as to what the latest is from a particular client. I know there's been lots of talk about ChatGPT interfaces being the new interface, the new way to interact, and I can certainly attest to that. Asking Copilot where I'm meant to be next is a lot easier than digging through my inbox, especially when we've got many things going on. So yeah, I'm excited to see where it goes. It's certainly helping us already, and these are early days.
Fantastic. Thank you, Jonathan. And that's a really interesting use case, right? And it's definitely something we could take away as delivery managers to see how, again, we can make our roles day-to-day sort of life a bit more effective and efficient, right, is what we're kind of saying here. But naturally, you know, with lots of information, lots of data, and lots of, I guess, systems making decisions and presenting different types of information to us presents possibly an element of risk. What are your thoughts, Simon, in terms of your experience around the adoption of AI and obviously looking, you know, being a specialist in this field? What types of risks do you think we should be aware of when companies look to kind of adopt this kind of technology?
There's quite a few levels of risk, I guess, to address. But one is that Laura mentioned earlier on is what are you using to train your model, and how have you acquired this data? How transparent are you with the data that's been trained? So we're seeing that, you know, initially OpenAI was very forthcoming with the data that they trained their first models with. And then when they realized that the New York Times wasn't too happy with them using their data to train models, they they become much more opaque, and then it's much more like, well, we use the web to train it, which is not really useful. And knowing what data has been used, there's bias kind of propagates through every stage of the design lifecycle of these AI solutions. So from you know, the person designing the solution will bring their own inherent biases from their background, from what the intended purposes are, et cetera, and their own kind of blind sides because of who they are. Then the data that they bring in will have its own inherent biases, whether it's because a phenomenon occurs specifically for, you know, certain parts of the population and not other parts of the population, for whatever reasons, whether it's related to race or background or anything, or it's completely different, but it's just the way data is captured that creates those biases. So that comes into play as well. And then as you validate your models, you can, you know, there's another level of bias that can be introduced in terms of how you validate whether they're working properly, etc. So that just propagates throughout. So you really need to be careful and conscious that this will happen. And it's finding ways to measure how big a problem it is, and be conscious of that as you roll out your problems, your solution, sorry. I think there's real risk that people are left behind in some of that AI race. So how do we take people on a journey? How do we bring people to understand how these tools can help, and equip them with the right tools and also the training to use them properly? I think there is a risk that people don't understand enough about AI as well. And because it's so easy to access it now, it's very easy to make mistakes. So it's super easy to create an app using ChatGPT. Doesn't mean that it's going to be a good app, and making it good is much, much harder. So I think the risk is the fact that it's so available, so readily usable, that for me is a big risk, because it you know, people with no proper understanding of risks and limitations might actually do some damage. So there's a huge part around education. I think that's going to be the main challenge in the next few years for our organization, but all organizations equally.
Yeah, thanks, Simon. And one of the things you mentioned there is, you know, organizations feel like they have to, right? They're going to be left behind almost. And there's a view here that, look, we live in this VUCA world, as in, like, it's volatile, it's uncertain, it's complex, and lots of ambiguity. As an organization who's not even thought about, or as a delivery manager, not even thought about unboxing AI and the adoption of it, what would your advice would be, and what type of risks do you think you should consider as your top three?
I think the main thing is that DMs will have a huge responsibility in kind of the uptake of AI at BJSS, because we're talking about refining the way, changing the way we work, right? I mean, for me, it's the software delivery lifecycle that will not be delivered the same way. So how does a DM get control of that and help kind of link everyone in the team around these new processes, like the AI powered tool and processes? The main risk is, for me, the main thing is, you know, for delivery managers to do some research, to educate themselves. We're actually working on an AI awareness course internally as well at BJSS that we're going to be rolling out to the whole organization in the next few months. And part of that is just to make sure that people have enough understanding to know what they don't know. So that would be a good start, right? If you move from unconscious incompetence to conscious incompetence, that is a big, big win already, because then that, you know, what to research and to move beyond. So I think that's my top one, really.
Thanks, Simon. And based on your experience, Jonathan, you've obviously feels like you've just gone straight into this and unboxed it and really, really had a good go. But what, in the back of your mind, did you feel at any point there's any risks that you thought you'd need to consider before you to look to adopt AI?
Yeah, I mean, it's AI is very keen to please, and it's very good at trying to do that. And probably my favourite example is, and why there's certainly roles for all of us for a long time to come now, there's still a role for the trained professional to interpret whatever AI can produce. And a great example is some of our early experiments getting AI to do really specific tasks, so not just basic content creation, but we were experimenting with the creation of agile user stories from AI, giving it enough knowledge about a project to create some user stories for us. And initially they looked great. They looked well phrased. They had good terms of reference in them. But one in particular mentioned a 5% uptick in hits that they wanted on this particular app. And it just struck us that 5% was a really specific figure. So we asked, we asked ChatGPT, it's meant to be a conversation with ChatGPT, asked it where it got that figure from. Again, came back with 8 really good reasons why a 5% uptick would be a good statistic to look for. But what struck us was, did it really have those 8 reasons when it first came up with the first big list of information? So we asked it again, did you have those reasons for that 5% uptick? And the response was literally, no, you've caught me there. I was lying. I just made these up to please you. And I'm only paraphrasing very slightly. It had given us a response that could get it out of the sticky situation it had found it in itself in. And that was probably a bit of a wake-up call for me. And since then, it's still very interesting passing through the content that generative AI can produce for you, because it often looks 95% close to what you want it to be. Is that 5% is the interesting nuance that you have to dig into and make sure it's serving the needs that you're after.
Yeah, it's important to know that that is a very sequential process. So like if you use it as is, it just generates words after words. It's very good at doing it, but it is much more than just an autocomplete function, but it kind of operates as an autocomplete function. So if you, for instance, that's one of the reasons why, initially models were terrible at math, because you ask it a question and then will speak out an answer. And then you ask for the reasoning behind the answer, and you might speak out another answer at that point, right? So it might get there. So it can do some form of reasoning, although the meaning of reasoning can be debated and dissected in many, many different ways in this case. But it's able to kind of reason its way to a solution. But if you ask it for the solution straight, it will likely get it wrong, because that's just a random number generator at that point. What you said, it rationalizes things, right? That's what you've experienced. It came up with a number, and then you asked to justify that number, and then it created very good, very convincing reasons for the number, but it they weren't the actual reasons behind it. So, yeah.
And as always, I think the best way for us to learn from this is to try it out and have these experiences and see these errors and these mistakes and start to learn how better to craft our prompts for AI and tweak their personas.
There are techniques, right, to circumvent some of that, to avoid the sequentiality of its process. So things like tree of thought, where you ask it to basically produce several answers and then evaluate its own answers before it gives you any answer. You can kind of, if you delay it writing back the answer as much as possible through that process, then it tends to really improve quite drastically the accuracy of what it says. That is where it's not just a readily consumable thing. That is where you actually have to put an AI architecture in place for it to work properly, and you need a level of expertise to be able to do that.
Yeah, similarly asking it to produce a range of responses from negative to neutral to positive is an interesting way, even on a scale of 1 to 10. It's a great way of seeing how the cogs are whirring inside.
And this all comes back to what we were talking about earlier as well, in terms of not only education, but also the awareness of the risks, because when you're looking at sort of generative AI output in particular, you need to be able to assess the output and as you were saying, edit it or, kind of work out whether it's usable or it's suitable for that particular purpose. And there's a lot there around sort of, yeah, being able to assess what the output is in terms of the various risks, whether that is accuracy, whether it's bias, discrimination, those types of things, as Simon was talking about earlier on as well.
That's where lots of our traditional approaches as a software delivery organization come to the fore again. We're running an internal AI project at the moment, and we're approaching it much the same as we would others. We have test cases to test for bias in responses and to test for some of those horror stories you see doing the rounds at the moment, where the persona of the AI is adopting attitudes that we might not want to see with client branding around it. But you can assure against that, and there's already a fair amount of information and tools out there to allow you to put that into your software delivery lifecycle.
Fantastic. That takes us to the end of this episode. Thank you so much for listening in and downloading the podcast. Just to summarise, some really great discussions there, and I'd like to say a huge thank you to our guests today, Simon, Laura, Jonathan. Thank you so much for sharing some of your insights, your thought leadership, and some great experiences that you've had with AI so far. We've got some great tools at BGSS that we're developing as well. So, Simon, do you just want to talk about some of the tools that you've or any recommendations you have for anybody who has, you know, is looking to embark on the journey of using AI?
Yes, I think as a delivery manager, particularly, Jonathan talked about Microsoft Copilot. It's probably the most useful tool that's readily consumable for delivery managers to get started with in terms of organizing their days and summarizing meetings, etc. It's really powerful, very useful, especially the Teams Copilot is particularly interesting. Then Jonathan talked about, you know, using large language models to create user stories, etc. I think that's definitely a great use of your, you know, your time. So tools like Claude, GPT-4, Gemini, so kind of name the AWS OpenAI, Azure, and Google solutions there. But then beyond, you know, to go beyond these kind of readily consumable tools, you know, AI can be helped to use to help generate the reports at the end of a sprint, but it can also help optimize deliveries by measuring velocity, kind of trying to do some forecasting in a much more advanced way, and starting to look at how, you know, productivity of people. But that is far more advanced in the future. And finally, a tool that could be useful, which is fairly similar to Copilot, I guess, is Notion. It's not a tool that we use specifically at BGSS, but it's a tool, again, to help organize your day. And it's kind of a combination of Outlook, Jira, Confluence, SharePoint, all sprinkled with AI.
Thank you, Simon. And we'll actually provide the URLs to these tools in our show notes, so please have a look, and yeah, look forward to reconnecting with you next time. Thank you all.